Welcome to the WWE podcast with Aid Willis. Well, this week's been a hell of a lot more interesting or worrying, whatever way you want to look at it, with this virus that's going around the world. It's almost put the world at halt, which is a bit strange. I've never had something like that happen in my generation. Hope everyone's safe. Hope everyone's following the healthcare advisories, what the healthcare organisations in your particular part of the world are saying. So just keep that up and stay safe, guys. We had an interesting one with SmackDown this week. There was no fans. It was at the Performance Centre. I'm sure you all saw it. So I'm going to do a review the best way I can of what I saw, what I felt. The commentary team was Triple H and Michael Cole, which was a bit different. Well, Triple H basically made that Performance Centre. Now, I know you had OVW and FCW, which was basically the same thing. But Triple H really made that NXT a brand of its own. So the Performance Centre is his little baby. It made sense to have him there. And I actually quite liked him on commentary. It just gave that little bit of a... instead of just talking about the matchups, because as I'll get to, the matchups were a little bit hard to watch just because of the no fans, the no interaction side of things. So having Triple H there with a little bit of conversation about other topics was quite good. So SmackDown kicked off with Bayley and Sasha. They come out, they cut a promo. They basically come out and act like there's fans, which I thought it was a little bit of light humour at the situation, which was okay. They then follow this up with cutting a promo. They sort of have a go at Paige because she didn't turn up to do with travel issues. Whether that's true or not, even Triple H mentioned that he didn't particularly believe it. Who knows? Especially with the virus. I mean, everyone's got not an excuse, but more of a reason to not go. And if she's genuinely worried or she genuinely had travel issues, then that's no hard done by, is it, than for what's going on in the world. They were saying that they built the Performance Centre, and even Triple H and Michael Cole even mentioned that this is sort of true. They did help create it because of what they'd done there in the past. Alexa and Nikki Cross come out, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. Nikki with these horrible, horrible promos. Like, I actually think that it's just an awful personality, and it's a clash of two differences at one point, where I think Alexa Bliss is absolutely amazing on the mic. Well, I actually thought that when they teamed up, Alexa was going to improve her when she started dressing nicer and with the makeup instead of just that sort of like angry, sort of like unhinged character which she had with Sanity. But I feel like that's gone a bit stale again. The Moment of Bliss thing is the only thing that maybe Nikki Cross gets across in the right way on the mic for me. In ring, she's very strong. She's ferocious. She's aggressive. But it was just one little thing that I'm hoping other people have seen as well. It's just the fact that I don't think it's just Nikki Cross. I think it's women in general. When they do like a crossbody, or let's say a splash or something like that from a high risk maneuver, is what commentary would call it. They just don't seem to get any air. They don't seem to jump. They don't seem to fly. Like, the perfect one at the moment is on Raw with Montez Ford. His frog splash is absolutely incredible. The amount of air time he gets, the height he gets. Where I know Nikki Cross is only small, and bless her, she's not going to get the height of that, so you're not going to expect that. But she just seems to fall onto the opponent rather than actually jump and sort of land, if you know what I mean. She jumps at them rather than up and down. I don't know, if next time you watch her, keep an eye on it and let me know what you think. I love Alexa Bliss in the ring. I love her character. I love everything about her. Yet again, Bayley and Sasha are a great heels, even without the crowd. They actually work so well together, and I'm sort of changing my mind to do with the feuding. I'd almost like them to stay as a partnership, but maybe Sasha revenges Bayley's eventual loss, and then she wins the title instead, and then they can obviously stay together as like a duo. So the actual match itself was a fairly quick one, as all the matches were really on SmackDown. It was an okay match. I actually quite liked the fact that Bayley and Sasha were still sort of heels, even without the crowd. They were sort of like playing to the ref and actually played to Michael Cole and Triple H as well. The match ended with Alexa Bliss getting attacked by Asuka on the outside, and then Sasha gets a submission win over Nikki. This is actually because Alexa and Nikki was calling out the Kabuki Warriors, but this was only met by some tweets, which they mentioned while they were walking out to the ring before the match. But at least this means that there will be a proper feud for the tag titles, which hasn't been relevant recently due to Asuka being in a matchups with Becky Lynch, and Kairi Sane has been effectively unneeded during that because she didn't really have a part to play. She didn't really get involved. She was just sort of like part of the ring walk and then part of the look on the outside of the ring with the umbrella and the tag titles. But ultimately, it was like unnecessary for her to be there. But I'm glad that they're getting back to the Kabuki Warriors of a tag team. Alexa and Nikki could potentially have some good matchups with them, and it just gives that relevancy back to the tag team titles in the women's division. Now, after this, we had an interesting one. I didn't know this was going to happen. Now, I'm sure this is only because there was no fans. I don't think this was happening in a normal SmackDown environment. However, Michael Cole interviews Roman in the ring for what they are billing now as a spear versus spear. Now, for me, I don't actually think either of them have got the best spear in the company, like now or ever. For me, I think Edge has a better spear. I think Bobby Lashley of old had a better spear. For me, I would go to say Rhino's got the best spear. I know it's called Gore, but it's the same move, let's be honest. But for me, Rhino's probably the best one. If you look at it, the leap he gets, the actual connection he gets with the midriff. But it's a weird one because a spear for me, although it is a finishing move, it seems everyone does it. Now, as I said, you've got Edge, Rhino, Bobby Lashley, Christian did it for a while, Batista, obviously Roman Reigns, Goldberg, even Big Show did it for a while. Now, if you haven't seen that one, go and watch it on YouTube, and it is pretty terrible. It's like more of a diving shoulder tackle, but it really is just a shoulder tackle due to Big Show's size. So I don't know why they ever really got him to do that, but anyway. As I was saying, I don't actually think this segment would have been a thing if the crowd was there. It was sort of a slow, dull segment for what WWE live shows normally are, but under the circumstances, it suited the programming perfectly. And Roman Reigns in an interview situation is brilliant, I actually thought, and his personality came across so much better. So I don't know whether he chokes a bit in front of the fans on the mic, or it's the fact he's not doing the usual call to tough guy persona in the interview, but for me it's just so much better. Like, he cracks a joke about Goldberg being too stupid to work a digger being from Georgia. That little bit of humor mixed with the respectfulness is what Roman Reigns is. It just never comes across like that, like in usual promos we see week in, week out. Like, Roman has tried to make this match a bit more meaningful, mentioning about he's worked too hard and his wrestling upbringing, and he's dedicated his whole life from this and from his wrestling family, and the fact we don't have time for part-timers. That gives a little bit more sense to it, as you can now understand that Roman Reigns doesn't want a part-timer being champion, which, to be fair, neither do I. I don't think any regular fans, any hardcore fans want a part-timer being champion. I actually quite like Brock Lesnar being part-time champion, but still, like, especially Goldberg. And that's just a better reason than just building it for spear versus spear. Because as I've said, and I'm sure if you listen to my podcast, I like to be able to invest in the feud and the characters. So to invest in a feud, a meaningful feud, I just find it much more easier. I prefer it. It makes a lot more sense to me. And I'm actually quite excited for it. I mean, now they're going to have a head-to-head or contract signing next week. So that'll be interesting. Hopefully it sort of kicks off a bit and we can see what Goldberg or Roman Reigns, how they work together, because obviously we've never seen anything like that. So we just see that sort of in-ring chemistry. From what I'm reading is that Goldberg is quite happy to put Roman Reigns over. So that might mean that Goldberg takes a few more bumps than what he's usually doing, because let's be honest, he hits a couple of spears, botched spears, he gets up, hits a botched jackhammer, and then that's it. That's the match done. Well, that's not going to happen with Roman Reigns, and it's definitely not going to happen with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. So it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully we get a little bit more insight on that next week. After this, we had a welcome back interview with Jeff Hardy. Now, I felt a little bit sorry for Jeff Hardy because it was a big return. Obviously, he's a big star. I don't know whether it was just because of the circumstances, as I said, with no fans and everything, that it was a bit of a letdown in a return. Now, I'm not talking about the match, just in the fact he sort of comes on, I'm returning, and then effectively goes to the ring a bit later. But whether they could have built it a little bit more with the fans, I think he would have got a huge reaction. So it's a little bit of a shame. I would have actually liked to see him maybe push back a... Well, I suppose you can't push it back a week because we don't know what's going to happen. But you know what I mean? I would have rather it been in front of fans. But as due to circumstances, no one can change that. King Corbin interrupts his interview. And as I always say, I love him as a heel. I love him talking. Elias comes into the picture with a guitar saying he's written a song about Corbin and about what he said to him last week. I'm glad this feud, in terms of Elias and Baron Corbin, is a slow build to what looks like it's going to be a feud between the two, because it will have great promos, it's going to be great matchups, and hopefully an overall good, interesting feel to it because of how well both characters work in their particular role. Now, I know in terms of actual programming, this wasn't the next match, but while I'm on the topic, we'll talk about Jeff Hardy versus Baron Corbin. So Corbin begins with the onslaught on Jeff before the match even starts. And then obviously the bell rings, the match starts, and even after the bell, Corbin continues the onslaught. Again, this is a very, very quick match. So there's not too much matchups I can really talk about and delve into. But as I said, I'll do my best with the review. It's more about the storylines. It's more about the actual circumstances I want to talk about, because I actually quite like the show. But Corbin turns his attention to Elias, which is actually watching from ringside with Cole and Triple H. And then he starts playing the guitar in distraction. Jeff hits a twist of fury. Now, that's the same as a twist of fate. We all saw it. We all know what that is. This has been changed because now Matt's left the company, I'm assuming. I did see Matt Hardy said he hasn't trademarked it, which that was my immediate feeling. And especially if he goes to another promotion like AEW or something, I'm assuming he's going to take that move with him. I don't know whether the WWE have just changed it, or maybe even Jeff Hardy's changed it. I don't know. But a twist of fury is effectively the same name. It takes some getting used to, but we all know it's a twist of fate. This led to a swanton bomb off the top rope for the win. Now, as I said, it was another quick match. However, it was quite nice because it was a comeback fight. It was just enough to ease him back into it and let us see what we've been missing with Jeff. Now, obviously, there was no crowd interaction. I think a big part of his entrance is the crowd, like him getting involved with the music, because I actually find it quite an upbeat. It's like one of the musics that you actually quite like as a live audience member. But I actually quite like the short match for Jeff Hardy. I just wonder what part Jeff Hardy will play in whatever storylines that this Corbin Elias feud has. Now, maybe he can continue in some sort of way in like a background part of the Corbin Elias feud, as they don't seem to be actually fighting yet. So you could have him fight Corbin again because Corbin lost, which I'm sure is gonna happen. Or you could have him fight Elias because there isn't any like favouritism. It's not like Jeff's like backing Elias or backing Corbin. It's just one of them things where he's just having a matchup. So there's no reason why he couldn't have a match with Elias and Corbin costs him the match. A bit like Elias effectively distracted Corbin, so Jeff Hardy won the match. So he could play a little bit of a part in that just to ease him into it. Or I'm sort of hoping he could get into a head-to-head with vacant superstars like Braun Strowman or Sheamus. Like, hopefully, again, as I say all the time, hopefully something meaningful, hopefully one with a bit of a storyline. So we'll have to see. I mean, it's a bit of a shame for Braun Strowman, really, because I don't know where he can go. I would like to see him, as I've said on previous podcasts, against Sheamus. Because of Sheamus's aggression, he's not going to get pushed around. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see where that is heading, especially with WrestleMania coming up. But just a little bit of a weird one. I suppose not a weird one, it's still relevant. But Jeff Hardy's back tattoo. Now, what a work of art that is. I've recently just got a tattoo, a top sleeve on my arm. So that hurt, and it took a long time. So God knows how long that back tattoo took, and that must have absolutely killed. But fair play to him. It looks incredible. The detail on it is amazing. So fair play. Now, moving on to Daniel Bryan and Drew Gulak. I got to mention about my podcast before Elimination Chamber. Like, I was not happy with the Bryan vs. Gulak feud. I wasn't happy with the fact that Gulak is very, very low in terms of the pecking order, and Bryan should be up there. Now, I was actually amazed and so impressed with the match that they had at Elimination Chamber and how well this match was pulled off. I thought it was incredible. And I just want to say it was my mistake. Completely, I hold my hands up, and they've completely blew what I said out of the park. And it looks like, actually, this sort of like storyline or partnership or feud, whatever way that it's going to go, it looks like it's really going to work. So it looks like Daniel Bryan is actually going to help Drew Gulak become, hopefully, at least a mid-card player at this current time, and then see what happens in the future. The way he is built with his like gimmick of the slideshow things, I think that's quite creative. I mean, it was a little bit more aimed at a squash character, so he was basically getting beaten up all the time. But the way they portrayed it with Bryan, I know it's very quick how they've done it, but Elimination Chamber, he counted everything. I know we've all seen it, and it was so good. Now, what's happening now is Bryan needs his help. He's going to get the help from Gulak, which I absolutely love, because, as I said, I really love that gimmick of the slideshow thing. So Bryan teaming with Gulak will elevate Drew massively. And if he continues having matches like he did against Bryan, then he's definitely a star that I will be looking forward to seeing in the future, now, present, whenever. He's actually quite good on the mic as well. I just hope that Gulak is more of the talker manager. So from a new fan's perspective, so say there was a new fan watching it, it would almost look like Bryan is the lower star and Gulak is the top guy. As this, in the partnership, this would elevate him even more. Like, I don't want, if they're going to try and push Gulak, I don't want Gulak coming out with Bryan on the mic, him sort of standing behind him, like, being that secondary person, secondary guy in that partnership. So, if they're going to play it right, and if they're going to try and push Gulak, he's going to have to be the main guy. Look, we all know Daniel Bryan's a top guy. He's going to be in the main event picture again, and then he'll drop back down, and he'll go again, and he'll drop back down, and he'll go again. It's just what Daniel Bryan does. So we don't need him in sort of that main role, if you like, in this partnership. Now, I know I'm going sort of against what I'd previously said. I'll try and explain myself a little bit more. Of course, I want Daniel Bryan, because he's such a big star, in the main event picture or mid to main event picture. Now, obviously that's not happening. He's dropping down and he's trying to help Drew Gulak become a bigger star. So if you're doing this, if you're doing it this way, I just don't need him being that main guy. Like Seth Rollins is with Buddy Murphy. Buddy Murphy is still secondary. He's still behind Seth Rollins. Now, that's because that's a totally different angle. It's a totally different way of doing things, because Seth Rollins is the leader of the faction. Now, this way, Bryan has gone to Gulak for help, because he's seen how he can count. He's counted everything that Bryan has. So Gulak can be the main guy. And that will make it even more interesting because he will effectively be that top manager of Daniel Bryan, which if you're a manager of Daniel Bryan, which is already a huge mainstay superstar, that's incredible for your future, for your longevity, for your sort of CV, your experience and everything like that. Now, they had a similar thing with Cody Rhodes over on AEW, which I don't really watch very often, to be honest, anymore. Never really got into it. With his coach outside that would give him pointers during the match. I know, like, if he was getting beaten up, he'd go to the corner and then he'd sort of get, like, get a little pep talk and then he'd basically adjust some things and go on to win the match. Now, if they're going to do something like this, okay, I would rather Drew Gulak sort of like goes into the match. Maybe, I don't know, Daniel Bryan might lose a match. They have a bit of a chat after, and then Gulak goes and wins a match straight after and sort of shows him how it's done. I don't know. We'll see how that one plays out. So anyway, we had Cesaro versus Daniel Bryan. So it was another quick match with Bryan getting the pin via a roll-up, which seemed a little weird to me because a few months ago, if not weeks ago, Bryan would have won this match a lot easier. So I don't know whether they are portraying it as if Bryan has lost it all or needs coaching or just is on bad form. I'm hoping it's poor form because coming back and suddenly forgetting everything you've ever done, being world champion, being tag team champions, like, it's a little bit weird. So hopefully it's just poor form. Shinsuke Nakamura attacks Daniel Bryan after the win, and Gulak comes in to defend him by, again, countering, blocking all the strikes, which has basically made Shinsuke Nakamura famous, all the striking. Sammy, which was on commentary at the time in the match, then enters the ring to play the numbers game on Gulak, and all three, Cesaro, Sammy, and Shinsuke, attack Gulak, leading him to being thrown through the ring steps on the outside. Now, this looks like it could be a very interesting feud if booked right. There's two things that need to be booked right. How Gulak and Bryan work together, which I've already mentioned, like what I'd like to see. And also how the matchups take place in terms of like longevity. And in terms of promo, with Sammy being the speaker for the trio. If this is going to last. Now, we haven't actually seen this sort of matchup before. We haven't seen this feud before. So if this is going to last week on week on week, it could if it's done right, just because if you've got two people on one side and three on the other, there's so many different variations and combinations through tag team matches or just one-on-one matches. They can fight each week and keep it different. So Cesaro versus Gulak next week, and then Bryan versus Sammy, and then Gulak versus Sammy, and so on, again with Shinsuke, and then a tag team variation. It just keeps it a little bit different, rather than having, as we've seen in some feuds, just the same matches week in, week out. We get bored, and then for a pay-per-view, we have the exact same match we've been watching for weeks. That's just a bit of my opinion, and that's what I feel anyway. Then we had a Miz TV type thing with Miz and Morrison. Now, this was a horrible, horribly scripted promo. Miz is normally so good at just off-the-cuff sort of speaking, whether it is actually off-the-cuff or not, but he makes it look like he's literally just saying it from his heart, from his head, just literally coming out with his personality. But Morrison can't hit a promo anyway. He can't speak. For me, he just can't speak on the mic. So leave it to Miz, but this just wasn't natural. They had that terrible song or chant at the end, and it was just worthless. The tag team match at Elimination Chamber was, I would actually go as far to say it was exceptional. Like, I thought, because you had the consistency of the New Day, Rude and Ziggler, the Usos, mixed with the high flying spots from Lucha House Party, the popularity of Otis, and I must say, actually, the much improved skill set from Tucker in Heavy Machinery, of them two. Because Tucker actually hit some unbelievable moves and was a lot more sort of like involved. And obviously Otis, with his popularity, it just made the match what it was. And then you had what I thought was going to be a very consistent other tag team, especially seeing they're being their tag team champions and their history together and how experienced they are, And it was just a poor excuse of a match when they were involved. Now, I watched this match with my girlfriend. Now, she doesn't watch it all the time, so you get a sort of like different opinion. You get like a sort of a natural opinion where obviously our opinions, if you watch it, you're a hardcore fan, you watch it week in, week out, you build your opinions up, so you already prejudge things. Where as a neutral, she doesn't necessarily know all the characters, she has her favourites, but even she said that it didn't look like Miz and Morrison were interested. It didn't look like they were putting in any real effort to make it believable. I mean, if you disagree with that, fair enough, but please just watch it again and look at some of the kicks and the slaps from the Miz with literally the most minimal of effort. And it didn't look like it hurt. It didn't look like he wanted to be kicking or slapping or hurting anyone. Morrison was slow. Normally he's quite upbeat and fast with his flips and everything like that. So for me, if you're going to be champions, at least make it worthwhile for us fans. Now, again, this segment actually on SmackDown, not Elimination Chamber, only happened due to the fans not being there. So it was basically filling airtime. It was a very, very quick sort of like Miz TV in a way. I didn't really feel it was needed, but if it was only to fill a little bit of space, then that's all it was. I just hope they get better in the ring. I mean, Miz, now after Elimination Chamber, and I've been thinking about it a little bit, ever since he sort of like went away from being a solo competitor, his performances have sort of dipped. Now, they sort of rose a little bit, or I thought anyway, when they do more tag team stuff, which I mentioned, I think it was last week on my podcast, that like they start getting involved with a little bit. So they have the same moves where, like a classic one is where Miz runs and kicks through the bottom rope. And now Morrison throws him into that move. So that's just a little bit of tag team partnership. But the actual moves themselves, they don't look anything like what they were. Like the kicks that he's basically nicked off Daniel Bryan, they're like taps now. They're not kicks, they're taps. So I don't know why he's sort of like just dropped all the aggression and dropped all of that, which actually made sort of like Miz popular, and of course like the mic stuff, but even the mic stuff has dropped now. So I just feel like they're going away from what the Miz was. But anyway, that's what I think. And again, if you disagree, give me a tweet, which I'll say at the end of the podcast, and we can have a discussion, or I'll talk about it next week. So to finish off with, we had the John Cena interview with Michael Cole in the ring, similar to the Roman Reigns segment, apart from they just didn't sit down. He was talking about his career and his previous encounters with Bray Wyatt and his thoughts on Bray claiming that The Fiend was created through Bray's failure against Cena before. So ultimately sort of like blaming Cena. Now, he sort of blamed everyone, like anyone he's come up against, The Fiend has sort of like blamed them, because it's basically all revenge, isn't it, what he's been doing. But particularly this one, because obviously it was at WrestleMania in 2014, WrestleMania 30, so it had a little bit more importance to it, of course. Cena basically denies all this. He says he blames the laziness of Bray Wyatt, and that his biggest downfall is himself. Now, he talks about his own losses, about John Cena's own losses against the likes of The Rock, Undertaker, The Undertaker sort of like beat him up, CM Punk, Brock Lesnar, and saying that he adapts and overcomes and moves forward instead. Now, this was a very passionate part about saying that superstars want nothing but to be in WWE and work their asses off, and then when they get there, they get lazy and like fall off. Now, this to me seemed to have a lot more passion and a lot more meaning from the heart of the real John Cena than just trying to build the feud. Now, this is what I love. This is what I've been wanting. The real sort of like in-depth, like build-ups, the promos which he's had with The Rock, Punk, Lesnar, Roman Reigns, AJ Styles, all of them before. Now, as I've said in previous podcasts, this is what I wanted with Bray Wyatt, because if he can beat or at least match Cena on the mic, it is a passing of the torch. Now, as I've said, this was a hell of a lot more meaningful than just trying to build this feud. Sorry. This has come from his genuine thoughts and his feelings deep down, which is interesting because it's also intriguing because it also shows how good Cena has been to stay at the top for so long in his career, just for his like pure drive and commitment. He looks directly down the camera and says he accepts his challenge due to him wanting the investment of the WWE to be towards the future, which in his opinion is not Bray. Now, he goes on to mention that in his opinion, it's McIntyre, it's Ciampa, it's Velveteen Dream, it's Matt Riddle that is the future. This again seems much more from the heart and real than just promo work. Now, I wonder if they've had some sort of disagreement or John has heard and seen what Bray is like backstage after certain events and doesn't like his attitude, because as we all saw, his fall from the Wyatt family when that disbanded was a huge, huge drop, leading to a pretty average pairing with Matt Hardy. And yes, they won the tag team titles, but it was more through the popularity of the broken slash woken gimmick rather than Bray himself. Now, maybe Cena genuinely doesn't think Bray was putting in the effort, especially after the WrestleMania loss to Cena. That it's been hard to understand now the fact he's been given the creative opportunities, because really, now that The Fiend or Bray Wyatt has actually been given the creative opportunities, he's put in the effort and he's absolutely smashed it. And The Fiend and the Firefly Funhouse concept, and it's been billed and been reported as one of, if not the best creative thing in WWE history. And that's a hell of a big, big statement, whether you agree with it or not. It is one of the best. Now, Firefly Funhouse Bray interrupts with him laughing, and he comes over the audience barrier, like so from the actual audience side of the things. And this is just a brilliant personality. He compliments him, saying that he's so excited to see him, and he genuinely looks excited. And he's just one of them characters. Like, it's so good and intriguing. He gets in the ring, and then he's saying that Cena's all wrong. Like, it's about Cena cares about Cena. He doesn't care about the future. He just wants the spotlight and the attention. Now, can anyone argue with that? I know John Cena does a hell of a lot of work for WWE itself and for the kids and everything like that. But how many times have we heard that Cena cares about Cena? Cena cares about himself. So again, I think this bit probably has a little bit more of a real feel to it. I'm not going to go as far to say that it wasn't scripted, and I'm not going to say that it's just off the cuff and come straight from the heart. I'm sure they've sort of wrote it before and have an idea of what to say, but I do feel like this has come from real feelings. I didn't like the fact that Bray Wyatt just looked at the floor. He sort of like paced up and down, which the pace up and down is fine, but to look at the floor, I would have liked him to actually look at John Cena. But I think this was more because it was leading to that final moment where he said, like, John, let me in. And then he looked at him. So it was like almost like a big build up to the actual eye to eye contact. But that's just for me. Like, I just feel that if you're speaking to someone, it's better to make eye to eye contact, especially in the ring, if you're having that sort of argument. I felt that when Bray was saying that Cena took something from him, that was genuinely about that he took his opportunities at the time in 2014. Because, as I said, after that, he just dropped down the pecking order so much. So I'm wondering if, because they say that Cena had such an influential part backstage, that I'm wondering after the loss, maybe that's when the opportunity started deteriorating. Now, I was extremely pleased with this short promo and the genuine real feel, as I've said. And I'm hoping this is just something that gets better and better. I'm hoping it happens more and more. I'm hoping they have Firefly Bray like in the ring live a lot more too. Now, I wouldn't say to stop the vignettes, because I think they work. And I'd also like to see, Cena, as I said, Cena in the ring and Bray Wyatt Firefly Funhouse on the big screen, having an argument that way. But I also think that if Cena's in the ring, or even in the future when this feud's done and dusted, to have whoever in the ring and Firefly Bray comes out in his little jumper and they have a little bit of a talk like they did on this bit, that also adds something, because talking live with the audience like he did in this episode, it's a hell of a lot better, really. And especially for big feuds like this, it's a hell of a lot more interesting, it's intriguing. And then the Firefly Funhouse stuff could be just at the sort of maybe start of feuds, or even during the feud, but the real meaning stuff, to say at a contract signing, doesn't necessarily need to be the Fiend again, where he stabbed his hand with the pen and wiped blood on it and all of that. It could just be Firefly Funhouse Bray having a bit of a laugh, having a bit of a joke, and that light-hearted humour, sort of like personality, saying he's really pleased and all of that. And then the dark side of how the Fiend's going to tear him apart, saying it's going to be a massacre like he did in this part with John Cena. So guys, that's my SmackDown review. I hope everyone enjoyed it, and thank you so much for listening, especially during these hard times, wherever you are, potentially in lockdown, self-isolation. Hoping anyone that's ill gets better, and I'm hoping anyone that isn't showing any symptoms, like, stays away from it, stay clean, listen to the healthcare authorities. And we'll see what happens with wrestling next week, whether it's going to be behind closed doors again, or hopefully there's an improvement in this virus around the world. Now, I'm sure we've all seen, and I'm hoping that there's some announcement with what's happening with WrestleMania. Hopefully that's not behind closed doors, because that will be very, well, bad, really. I mean, again, it's to do with the circumstances, but you can still be disappointed with it. It's not going to be the same WrestleMania without the fans, but we'll see. So again, if there's anything you want me to talk about, or anything you want to talk to me about, hit me up on Twitter, give me a DM, give me a message, give me a tweet. My Twitter's @AidWrestle, that's AIDWrestle, and I'll bring you my SmackDown review next week. Keep safe, guys.
You think you know me?